Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Monday, March 11th, 2024. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. Tools are available absolutely free through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice on the website at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the two words that say start here in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? That chapter of the book contains a narrative description and explanation of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for over 19 years now to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional experience I have into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Click the link, download it, print it off, copy it as often as you'd like, and use it over and over again, absolutely free. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. If you choose to do that before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. If you tap on that, it will let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet. It contains an abbreviated version of that worksheet process. And it contains a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. We hope people do all of that soon and often, primarily because it tends to improve the quality of people's lives the more they actively apply these tools in their lives, and secondarily because it tends to prompt comments, questions, answers, and testimonials. And if you have any of those to share with us, we would appreciate you doing so by giving us a call at 563-999-3581. Call that number and press 1 on your phone. It'll put the little icon of a hand by your phone number. I'll be able to turn on the microphone and announce you by the area code, and we can have a conversation. If you'd like to get some feedback or submit a comment or a question or a testimonial, and you do not want to call live or you don't have that option, you can send us an email. You can email me at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org, and or you can email Jeannie at jeannie@whyagain.org. That's whyagain.org. And when we get a comment or a question from you that is through the email, as time allows, we will address it on the internet show and then take the take the time to send you a comment or a note through an email about what day and time that occurred, and you can listen back to the archives for your feedback. And we appreciate whenever anybody gives us feedback because it makes it far easier for us to live into our intention with this work. The intention we have with this work is to be a service, and that's just a whole lot easier to do when we know how these things are landing for you. What aspect of the work we're doing are you finding most beneficial? And if you will grace us with that awareness and knowledge, we will continue to endeavor to do more of what works best for you. So again, the call-in number is 563-999-3581. And if you call that number and press 1, it will let me know you want to talk, and I'll put the put your microphone in play, and we can have a conversation. I would like to just put it on the record that I'm learning a lot through a series of books around brain health and brain functioning. And the one that I'm working through now is titled The Brain That Changes Itself. And there's a tremendous amount of knowledge about brain functioning that has changed dramatically even since I was in graduate school. And I know we've talked about how powerful it is for us to be able to stay in the open and questioning state. And that's true even especially, not even, that's true especially for science, where the scientific method is all about trial and error and learning and guessing and testing out hypotheses and putting together theories about how things work and then putting together hypotheses that will allow you to test it and then actually doing whatever the test requires to prove or disprove your theory and your hypothesis based on your theory. And one of the things that they're learning and have demonstrated that is basically the opposite of what had been taught for decades is that the brain is very plastic and it remains able to change well into old age, and that there are certain factors that facilitate that and certain factors that retard your ability to change or block your ability, your brain's ability to change. And so I have to highly recommend for anybody who has the bandwidth to check out the books by Dr. Norman Doidge, D-O-I-D-G-E, and the first one is the Brain That Changes Itself. And he has another book about brain functioning titled The Brain's Way of Healing. So it is highly recommended for all of us to stay in that open, allowing space, questioning space, so that we can continue to learn and grow. It's also highly recommended that we figure out what it is that allows our brain, what stimulates our brain to grow and change in And it is literally some of the things they're learning are, if they're not directly opposite of what had been taught for decades, it's significantly different from what's been taught for decades, and therefore important for us to pay attention to if we're going to keep our brains healthy in old age and keep growing and learning at every age. So 563-999-3581. Let us know how these things are landing for you. Let us know what's most useful in the work we've been doing. Over the weekend, part of what I did was to go back and review some of the files, the audio files of shows where we were reviewing Lesson 3 in the Way of Mastery. And I review that because it is, to my mind, one of the pivotal lessons in the Way of Mastery. And the core dynamic from that particular lesson that makes it pivotal in my mind is the idea that even the process of perception distorts the reality of life. And I know a lot of people, you know, when they hear something like that, they start thinking, wait a minute, what? That's our only way of relating to the world is through our perception. And that's where it's really useful, from my perspective, to understand that that's not the only way to relate to the world. And that if we are thinking that perception is our only way to relate to the world, then we're locked in a very narrow, ultra-narrow, thinner than one-tenth of the diameter of a human hair, kind of a narrow perspective on life, because our senses are what give rise to our perception, our five physical, concrete senses give rise to our perception. And they are not our only way of understanding and experiencing life. Which is what it talks about in the beginning of this book. It says, the way of the heart is not the way of the intellect. It's not the way of the physical senses. The way of the heart goes beyond words and invites us to start living in the question and questioning everything about our perceptions. To learn to ask to be shown, to learn to live from what in a different part of the book they call divine ignorance. And in this book, the last couple lessons, it invites us to an exercise of remembering how little we know about anything in our world. And the more we're willing to do that, the more we acknowledge our limitations and ask to be shown something more vibrant, rich, alive in the moment, because our perceptions literally are not in the moment. Our perceptions are formulated by stimuli hitting our five senses and activating our brain, and our brain is loaded with all of these images, thoughts, emotions, physical sensations, trauma energies from our past, and they get activated, and they infuse, they inform the formation of the images in our mind and the understandings that our perception allows us to have. Some of the hard science on this can be found in videos by Anil Seth. A-N-I-L is the gentleman's first name. S-E-T-H is his second name. And one of the facts that I remember from watching one of his videos on a repeatedly, the fact that was given is when an image shows up in your brain, only about 20% of the information that goes into that image in your brain is coming from the light energy that strikes your eyeball. Just try to wrap your head around this. Your light hits your eyeball, and then your brain shows you a picture of something. And their science indicates that the vast majority of information, of the data points that go into creating that image in your brain, up to 80% of it is coming from your past, other things you've experienced and seen, other times in your life. And only 20% of it is coming from the eye receiving input from the world around you right now. This is how it is so accurate to say that your perception is not in the moment. You are not seeing things in the moment as they truly are. What you're seeing is the past. And you're seeing things you've experienced and interpretations you've made of life and trauma energies and things you've learned, like the Way of Mastery says, is intellect is like a garbage can shoved full of trivialities. And so the Way of Mastery is inviting us actively into an entirely different way of relating to life, to the world around us. And for the Western mind particularly, it is a massive challenge because we're literally conditioned to the opposite. We're conditioned to using our intellectual mind, our conscious logical mind, if you will, as our primary mode of interacting with life. So in any way that you can, day in and day out, your life will get better if you can begin to this living from a different level of energy, a different level of perception, a different level of questioning. You know, so many of us are literally rewarded and punished into a pattern of believing that it is critical for our safety and or our salvation for us to get it right, whatever it is in any moment. And the problem with that is, for most of us, getting it right means using nothing but the intellect. So how do you step into an entirely different way of relating to life and the world? If in your entire life you've been taught and rewarded, if you did it the right way, to use your intellect to try and come up with an answer, and punished if you got it wrong. So, you know, at one level, here's a tremendous amount of work for us to do. It's the unlearning of a pattern that has become a habit, a very strong habit, and then the learning of something positive to replace it, which is one of the reasons I started talking about the book, The Brain That Changes Itself, because there's a lot of research that indicates if you just try to break an old habit and you don't have a more proactive, positive habit to substitute for it, to keep your brain busy, to keep you motivated to learning and growing, it creates all kinds of problems. And it makes it really, really difficult to make the change you want to make, because the brain will go back to its old patterns. You know, the idea that neurons that fire together, wire together, has been proven. And at the other end of the scale, when the neurons fire away from each other, they separate, they disconnect, there's a shorthand word for that, a shorthand phrase for that that's eluding me right now, but it'll come to me. But the idea is, if I have something happen in close proximity in terms of time to another event, and I experience those in my brain, they get connected. And my brain is likely to make a cause and effect interpretation, even when none exists. So if I want to break a habit, one thing I have to do is quit doing the thing I'm doing that I want to break that isn't working, and the other thing I have to do is find a way to motivate myself to pay strong attention to doing something differently that's rewarding in a variety of ways. Which is why I talk frequently in this work about a two-prong approach. One of them is, I want to focus on my true nature as love, as Michael Rice puts in every worksheet process. It says at the top of the seven-step worksheet. I write my name in here and I say, I, Tim, who am love. And there are several reminders that my true nature is love. And that any time I'm experiencing something less than that, it means I'm using what the worksheet calls corrupt data, what you might just as easily call information from the past, right? Data from the past, to form my perception in the moment. So that's one prong, is to remind myself that my true nature is love, and that I can't ever be separated from my creator and from the flow of life itself. And then the next really important activity to engage in is the second prong, which is to say, whenever I'm consciously aware of something less than that, any kind of anger, fear, any of the emotions that I might label as negative, it's really important for me to take 100% responsibility for that experience and use a tool like the Reality Management Worksheet or Diedrich Wolzak's Six Steps to Freedom Worksheet or Byron Katie's The Work Worksheet or Ho'oponopono or the Sedona Release Method and actively work to dismantle the process within my conscious and or unconscious or subconscious mind that's creating the experience of myself as something less than my true nature. So, you know, the good news at one level is we've got a built-in alarm system to let us know whenever we're off the mark with our thoughts or our perceptions or our interpretation of life. And the not-so-good news is that that alarm system is really unpleasant when it goes off. It is the negative emotions that I experience. So if I'm willing to step into 100% responsibility for the negative emotions I experience, I'm able to step into the use of tools and to start changing the process within me that's giving rise to what I don't like. The oddest part about it in Lesson 3 from the Way of Mastery is this relates to the very process of perception. This relates to every judgment that I create. It relates to waking up to the fact that when I judge anyone or anything, good, bad, or otherwise, when I step back from something and judge it, I'm taking myself out of the flow of life. I'm distorting my own perception. I'm creating a perception that is further and further removed from the actuality of life, and the only way to avoid doing that is to learn to live in the question and to learn to actively work to dismantle any process within me that gives rise to something that's less than love. So because it is so foreign to what most of us have been raised with, I think it's a highly beneficial practice to continually return to Lesson 3 and any of the supporting lessons in this work that help me understand how valuable, how important it is for me to change every perception that leads to something that's less than love. Area code 610, you're in the air.
Hi, Dr. Tim.
Hello, Susan.
You're on to some great stuff. Okay, one of my questions is, I've been doing this, you know, dual prayer or whatever it is, and it's very sparse. I don't think I'm getting that much from the God side, and I don't write much on my side, but they often, thoughts that are worth thinking might come from God or come at odd times. But one thought that came was, it doesn't matter how you feel about this. I think I was feeling judgment about somebody or something. I don't even remember which one because I have lots of them. And it just said, it doesn't matter how you feel about it. That's just an observation, and maybe that's worthy of comment. The second one is a question. I've been doing some journal writing, and one of the things I thought I would do is write down the negative thoughts that I get in the middle of the night, stupid things I've done in my life, et cetera. And the list could be very long, but when one of them comes through, it's cringeworthy. So I think, well, what do I do with this? Here's this thing. I feel under attack by my memories. What if I wrote it down? But writing it down is like reinforcing the story, which we're encouraged not to do. So I'd love to hear what you think about that.
Well, what I do when I have something come to mind that's cringeworthy, I learned about this back before I even met Michael Rice 20-some years ago. I learned about this with the EFT tapping, that when I have something that's cringeworthy, it means I'm creating a belief and an interpretation about it that's creating the cringe. So it's
right.
In the EFT tapping world, when I was in that, the thing to do is commit myself to doing rounds of tapping on that until the cringe was gone, until it was just a neutral set of memories. Like, you know, one time I was in Chicago and I put ketchup on my hot dog and people were just horrified. And when I remember that, it's such a shameful thing. How could I have not known how the people in Chicago eat their hot dogs? And I do a round of tapping on it, tap, 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 until eventually it's okay. And I can remember eating the ketchup on the hot dog, and I don't cringe anymore. So basically, you know, it's taking the energetic connection of judgment, negativity of judgment, that's been made in my mind and putting it on extinction to talk about it from a behavioral perspective. Because with the EFT tapping, one of the biggest things that happens is the system relaxes. And Michael Rice's last couple of years has really gotten into talking about the sympathetic dominance and the parasympathetic response. And so one of the biggest things that they find in the research when they're researching EFT tapping is that it helps people move into a parasympathetic state, a rest and relax, rest and digest kind of a state. So if I think about something that has me cringing, that means my body is tightening and tensing as though preparing for an attack. And if I soften and breathe and do rounds of tapping until I can hold on to that while I'm softening and breathing and coaching my body to rest and relax, it breaks the connection, the cycle. It's very similar to what Michael Rice talks about in this work. When something less than love comes up, the process of healing only occurs when that less than loving energy or thought is held in mind and we bring the conscious, active presence of love to mind at the same time, and then the healing happens. It's a similar kind of a process. I get all intense within me, and I cringe at this memory, and then I tap and breathe and soften, even though I'm thinking of that memory that I've labeled as cringeworthy, until my body relaxes in the presence of that thought. And then something has changed, and it's changed for the better.
Does it stay changed?
It can, and if it doesn't stay changed, it just means there's another level of, you could say, healing I need to do, or another level of an association I've made between that cringeworthy thought and that the meaning I've given it. So, you know, in relation to what you're talking about, if I journal on something and it comes up and it's a cringeworthy thought, and I'm afraid, I don't want to keep journaling on it because it's just going to reinforce it, then I'm creating a fear about something that is completely under my control, my thoughts and my emotional energies. And it's completely under my control, especially if I know something like the reality management worksheet and or the EFT tapping. So what I would recommend, and what I do most often, is when I have those cringeworthy thoughts, I start doing the worksheet and or the EFT tapping around those thoughts until they've lost the meaning or the emotional charge, if you will, that I have given them.
There's a joke.
Go ahead. What's your joke?
The joke is a priest goes into a nunnery to hear the confessions of the nuns. You might have heard this. He comes out and somebody says, well, how was that, hearing the confessions of nuns? He said it was like being pelted with popcorn. And that's the way your ketchup is. I know you're not going to bring out the most cringeworthy thing you ever did as an example, but that is very tame, Dr. Tim. I can't imagine.
Yeah, it was. I intended it to be one of the most tame things you could imagine. But people, you know, but listen to me. Please listen to this. I'm about to say something really important.
Okay.
Most of
right,
what I
I'm
say
listening.
Is pure dribble. Most of what I say is pure dribble, but right now I'm on the verge of saying something really important.
Okay, I'm listening.
please listen to this. Course in Miracles says, there's no order of difficulty in miracles. Do you remember hearing that line?
Oh, I do. Oh, yes. Okay. I just took a deep breath. That's
it means,
good.
It means there's no order of difficulty in sin or cringeworthiness other than the ones we create.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't matter whether I say, oh, I cringe when I think about how I ran somebody off the road one night in a snowstorm because they were driving like an idiot, and I just, you know, I ran them off the road and I didn't stop to find out if they were safe. I just drove on and, you know, and then later I learned blah, 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 that they were injured or killed or whatever. And that's a cringeworthy. That doesn't matter if it's that or that I cringe over ketchup on a hot dog in Chicago. It's the same thing. It's me creating a meaning and me giving it its value, because the value I give it and the cringe that is occurring isn't occurring anywhere in the universe, but in my mind-body energy system at the time.
Yeah, that is true. But it did happen. So I just said out loud what anyone probably does is, well, but it did happen. It was, and it did hurt somebody, et cetera, et cetera. It's a way of making it real again and again and again and again. And you're saying,
right,
you
but
don't
you're
do
only,
that.
But, well, I'm saying that's what these teachings are telling us. It's
yeah.
not me saying, don't worry about anything you do. And but again, you know, we were just last week, we were talking about, you know, you could use these teachings to say, well, then it doesn't matter what we do.
Yeah.
And we can do whatever we want in any moment.
Mm-hmm.
Remember us talking about that?
Yeah, well,
but, you
yeah.
know,
and
when you're talking to this, you either talk to the book, The Way of Mastery, and it says things like, you're creating your tomorrows by the thoughts that you're dropping in the still, clear pool of your awareness today. And you're never a victim of those things that you choose, and yet you're going to feel the effects of them.
Yeah.
And then Lesson 9 says, all events are neutral. All events are neutral.
Yeah.
And so you've had a mass murderer somewhere in your town. That's an event. That's neutral. How could it be? How could it be if the loggers cut down all the trees and there's no more trees and then life on this planet ends? How could that be neutral?
Mm-hmm.
Because life's going to go on. And then this book says, and the great teachers say, we're ready for the next question. Oh, so then it doesn't mean that means what you're saying is it doesn't matter if I run around killing people or run people off the road in a snowstorm? And here's what it says. Of course not. Because part of awakening means to realize one's interconnection with the web of all relationships. It means awakening a reverence for the mystery that is capital L life. It also means to release judgment of another who would view the situation differently or who would choose to get angry and run somebody off the road, and to view them as another being of brilliance and light who's either temporarily forgotten or yet to discover their brilliance, a person who doesn't know that their tremendous capacity to create whatever they want in life or need in life without hurting anybody else. So just understand, we're not judging the action. We're saying that when you judge the action, you pull yourself out of the flow of life. And you pull yourself out of the questioning state, which is the only thing that can give you direct access to the capital T truth of what's happening in the moment. So when you cringe at a memory, don't be afraid to write it down. Write it down. Write down all the details of it, and then start doing your EFT tapping or your reality management worksheets. And dismantle the negative judgment and the negative emotional charge you have attached to that set of thoughts. And then you could say, it's not just thoughts, it actually happened. But if it's not happening in this moment, it's only a thought about what happened in the past. Yeah. And if it's happening in this moment, don't be journaling about it. Ask to be shown in this moment how you can be a blessing to yourself and others and take action based on what you're moved to do based on the awareness that you're connected to all webs of relationship and you're connected to your creator. You see how this works? As I'm thinking about something, if it's not happening in the moment, I'm dwelling in the past or I'm creating a fear about the future. If it's happening in the moment, I'm not really thinking about it if I'm asking to be taught by it. And then I'm willing to respond actively in the moment. There's no thought involved. And it's acting from the heart. That's what we're talking. I already said this earlier in this particular hour. The way of mastery says, learn to put the intellect down and put it aside. Your primary method for interacting with life was intended to be your awakened heart. And the awakened heart is always aware that it does not know anything other than its direct experience in the moment. So it wakes up and asks to be taught by life. It stays wide open and connected, and it is in an active flow of energy exchange with the other webs of energy that it encounters in each moment. It's not living in cringeworthy tension from thoughts of the past. It's not living in fear about what might happen in the future. It's wide awake in the moment, wide open in the moment. And that's what we're invited into with this work. So all of that stuff about, yeah, but, and thinking, but this happened and that was bad and that happened and that was horrible and that happened and that was good, but it could have happened even more, but this person stepped, all of that is just distancing yourself from the experience of life in the moment.
Well, I better not say anything because it's going to be a yes, but. And I understand that you're going to have a wonderful and good and accurate answer about it.
Well, so if you catch yourself with a yes, but, before you even state it, what happens inside of you? Do you argue for the yes, but, or do you soften and recognize, oh, that's just my intellect spinning with what it's been trained to do?
Yeah, it's spinning I've got to do some work on an issue with my family because it's just so a very hard thing is happening in the family. And I I have no perspective, even though everything you say makes sense. So.
Well, you know, it is one of our biggest challenges to deal with the people that we were raised with or that we have the most invested in. And even with them, understand that all of the emotions we experience are self-created. That's one of our biggest challenges in this work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because the emotions come up so quickly and because they're so intense.
Mm-hmm.
But it also means that that's where some of our biggest rewards are going to come. If we're willing to apply the tools. Right, the dynamics of how emotions are created and experienced in a person don't change because of the setting or because of the person that they're, you know, thinking about in that moment. The dynamics of how emotions are created and experienced stays the same. It's one of those sets of natural law. It's just a description of how things work. So yes, it is going to be more difficult when it's a family member or a loved one or, you know, someone that I've got a tremendous amount of time, intelligence, money, and energy invested in. And yet, at the same time it's going to be more difficult, the rewards are going to be more powerful and intense if I actively apply the tools and dismantle the negative emotional state and restore a level of loving interaction, a more neutral perception to my mind. And everybody benefits when I can stay more loving. When I can remember my true nature, what Michael Rice would have called years ago, he would have said, you know, this total, perfect, conscious, active, present love. If I can't have that as my mind state, I have work to do. And that's what, you know, Way of Mastery says, even when the building is crumbling around me, even when the bank account gets emptied out, the goal of this work is to be able to keep that, what Michael Rice would call that, total, perfect, conscious, active, present love in my awareness.
Yeah.
And as I've talked about, kind of an amendment to or, you know, kind of a refinement of Michael Rice's work is that the total, perfect, active, present love is all there is. It's always there. The part that's missing is the conscious awareness of it. We get distracted. We think it's less than that. We think there's evil, et cetera. We think that, you know, this is bad or wrong. And we move into judgment. And we lose the conscious part of the total, perfect, conscious, active, present love. Years ago, I started using the acronym TOP CAP. T-O for total, P for perfect, so that's the top. CAP is the conscious, active, present love. And then after years of listening to Michael Rice talk about that, and you know, reading Way of Mastery over and over again and questions from people in the support group, I came to realize, well, listen, the teaching that we're teaching says that the total, perfect, active, present love is always there. The only thing that changes from moment to moment is whether or not we are consciously aware of it. So when you have a yes, but, just check out within yourself, are you consciously, actively aware of the total perfect love that is your true nature? And if not, and you're arguing for the yes, but has got to be an error.
Mm.
It has to be an error of logic and thought. It has to be a spin of the intellect towards something that is far less beneficial than the truth of life in the moment.
Well, that's exactly the right thing, what you said about being conscious of it. That's a good thing to be reminded of. I don't want to do it right now, but it's right. I want to fight some more, but that's just ridiculous.
You want what?
I want to fight some more. Fight for my position, which is terrible. I mean, I'm not going to make an argument for it. Not at all.
Terrible is a judgment. Terrible is a judgment. No need to go there. Just be as honest as you can, gently with yourself. Yeah, right now my mind just wants to fight about this. Okay, you know, and then let it fight about it. But always know that you can come back whenever you're ready to something that will work far better than fighting about it.
Right.
Because remember, you know, it's just a game. It's just a ride. You know, be at play in the kingdom, Way of Mastery would say.
Yeah.
And so for now, you want to fight about it? Okay. Find somebody who wants to fight with you on it and go enjoy your little rough and tumble time.
A brawl. Yeah.
You know, mud wrestling is very popular in some places.
Right.
And the Way of Mastery says, that's perfectly okay if you want to do that. We will maintain our peace, and we will be here whenever you're ready.
Mm-hmm. That's good. Well, thanks, Dr. Tim.
Well, I don't know what for, but you're welcome.
Well, it's good.
I don't quite know what you've taken from this that you would say thank me for. But
well,
you're welcome.
It's the consciousness thing that's helpful. Just the fact, the actuality of the universe being made of love, and that I'm made of love, and I can, it's good to be reminded of that. So you put it a lot better than that. I'm not being very articulate right now, but that was very good. So I'm thanking you for that.
You're very welcome, and far more deserving than you realize right now.
Well, I put ketchup on my hot dogs, just so you know.
Nah, you better not do that in Chicago. Them's fighting words.
I'm going to go over there go to Chicago and put ketchup on and see what happens. I don't care.
They put it in movie scenes. They put it in comedy routines. It's a big thing for them.
That's so funny.
Well, I just encourage you to breathe and soften every time you remember you are getting tight and tense. And whenever you have a yes, but, or whenever
mm-hmm.
your mind tells you, I want to fight about this, it's okay. Mm-hmm. You can fight about it. And I'm also reminding you to, this work invites us to breathe and soften.
Right.
And see that as an option.
Mm. I mean, the other is just a variation of the punching in the nose option, which is very prominent in my family script. I don't know why this comes to mind,
yes.
Dr. Tim.
Go ahead.
Okay. I don't know if you heard the story about this young man who was challenged in many ways, but he loved animals, and he was living with his father on some farm or something. And he loved odd animals. Among them was a warthog. And he adored this warthog. And they had a great, trusting relationship. Until one day, the warthog stabbed him repeatedly with its horns, and evidently warthogs have horns that have barbs
tusk
going in the opposite direction, so that when you withdraw the horn, you get ripped. And this warthog obviously intended to kill him, and he managed, terribly injured, he managed to get away from the warthog, and the warthog was killed, you know, was put to sleep. And somebody asked him, how could, I forget his name, Wayne or some name beginning with W, how could Wayne have done that? And he said, oh, I wasn't killed by Wayne. I was killed by a warthog. I don't know how this fits in, but I think it's a great story. But there are parts
so,
of
so you mean so is the point of the story that the person is not personalizing it?
I think there was a part
is that
of the
point
warthog.
Of the story?
I don't know what the point is. I don't know why I'm telling you this, except that the warthog was also a wild animal. The warthog retained some part of himself that was not tameable. And even though he grew from tiny warthog into an adult warthog, and he was huge, part of him had never been tamed. And that part came out and tried to kill his most loving master. And I don't know why I'm telling you this, Dr. Tim. I really don't. I guess I think part of me is an inner warthog that just won't settle in. And I love the idea that we are love. I guess I don't believe it, though.
There it is. That's our work. That's that conscious peace from the total, perfect,
mm-hmm.
conscious, active, present love. And so the work has
mm-hmm.
to be to awaken our conscious awareness of our true nature as love. That's it. That's our work. That's why we do worksheets. That's why we work
mm-hmm.
actively to remove everything that's less than love from our experience. And it's what all this work is about, to bring us more into the conscious awareness of our true nature as love moment to moment. And if you don't like
that
to say our true nature is love, our true nature is being connected to our source. That means what?
That's good what you just last said. It's connected to our source. Our true nature is, what is our true nature? It's being connected to our source. The source is loving. What are we?
Yeah, you remain as you were created to be, as it says over and over and over again in this work. So, thank you for that. Your comments and questions, as always, greatly appreciated. I will remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Jim. Appreciate it. Good conversation, as always.
Thanks. You're welcome and deserving. Have a great show.
Thanks. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. And today is Monday, March the 11th, 2024. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk to us. And we'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. We'll give Michael a moment to dial in, and I think we have a couple of people that are supposed to call in today. And we got an email with some questions, so I'm sure that Michael will address all of that first and then get back into reading the Enlightenment. Hope everybody had a good weekend and are adjusting now to the new time. Time is such an illusion, but it's awesome that we're back on daylight time. I like the longer days and getting ready to get back into gardening as soon as we get past the freezing days over the next week. And Michael's joined us, so I'm going to say welcome, Michael. And the other Michael is not on yet, and so maybe address the emails that came in first, and then maybe Michael will call you by then.
Okay, maybe go ahead and send Michael an email or a text, quick text if you wouldn't. I'll go ahead with the email questions or thoughts.
Okay.
So welcome, everybody. Delighted that you're here. And we have a couple of points. I'm not sure I comprehend them fully, but I'll do my best to address them. And it would be nice, except this gentleman's in London, England, and doesn't have phone access to us here in the States. So it'd be nice if we could get that one resolved. So the first question that comes up, Sean, from Sean in England, is what makes a difference between being a stepping stone and the doormat? And I'm not sure, you know, there are a number of different ways I could understand that question, so I'm not sure exactly what direction you're going. But one thing for sure, this work does not support people being a doormat. The word meek in Aramaic is not about, you know, being in the ground and being stepped on or being a doormat. Doesn't mean turn the other cheek, doesn't mean accept every abuse and do nothing about it, but rather to take responsibility for what's going on within your own structure. And if what people, what behaviors, what things happen in the world resonate something in terms of victim mode or doormat, then take responsibility for owning those things and working through them so that you can stand clear, clean, with the mind connected to love and therefore intelligence, and hold people accountable. And so in that sense, every interaction that happens that the mind, that the average mind would, you know, interpret as being negative, would actually become a stepping stone in one's own healing process. Now, for me personally, a thing that really made a big difference in terms of understanding this stuff intellectually and working toward really putting it into practice was the day that I you know, it just became so clear to me. I like everyone else, like virtually everyone else, was raised as a card-carrying member of the One World Religion of Blame. If pain or trauma of some kind came up in my mind, you know, I was in sadness or hurt or rage or whatever, my mind could always show me how it was somebody else's fault. Now, somebody else might have done something really bizarre, outrageous, and insane, and they need to be held accountable for that. But if their bizarre, outrageous, and insane behavior arouses something based in hostility or fear in me, then I have a problem. And the day that I really got loose enough of the membership in the One World Religion of Blame to say, wait a minute, yes, they did something that was clearly inappropriate, maybe even illegal, but that's not the cause of the fact that my mind is now in a disabled position of some form of hostility or fear. And so for me, what really took me to a new level was every time that my mind would come up with some form of hostile or fearful response, which of course in the world's mind would have been perfectly justified, and virtually everybody would say, yay, go for it. They deserve that. And it's like, you know, gee, you know, I saw what that person did, and you're right. They really deserve your rage. But the question isn't, do they deserve your rage? The question is, do you deserve your rage? Because if you do rage, you get the original, they get the carbon copy. And rage is a mental illness. So for me, the breakthrough came when I got loose enough from that mindset of our whole culture teaches us that somebody else is the problem. I can remember back in the days when I was writing Why Is This Happening to Me Again, I spent a lot of hours in a couple of large bookstores, and I basically went through everything that these bookstores had on forgiveness, whether it was a psychotherapist, a psychiatrist, a rabbi, a minister, a priest, a therapist of any kind, and I just read everything I could on forgiveness. And there wasn't one, you know, as these people are writing how they work with people and what's going on. And, you know, they'd be describing their session time with people. And literally every one of them, I didn't find one case where the person was asked, so how are you going to take responsibility for what came up in you when they did that? Every time it was asked was, the question was always some variation on the theme of, well, how did that make you feel? The question, how did that make you feel, comes from the doormat, one world religion of blame. The belief that something outside of me is the cause of what's moving inside of me means that I'm in denial and I dissociate from the very cause of what's going on inside of me. And now for the rest of eternity, until I undo that denial, for the rest of eternity, every time that comes up, the only way I'll ever get to see whatever that energy is about is when I integrate it into my brain's image of someone else. I project it into them and believe that it's theirs. So for me, I went to a whole new level when I started to be able to say to myself, oh, this response is my mental illness, and I'm going to face and heal my mental illness. So the question no longer becomes, how did that make you feel? The question becomes, am I willing to be responsible for what came up for me? Am I willing to look at the thought disorder that creates this sensation of hostility or fear in me, which is a symbol that or a signal that I'm in denial? Am I willing to take responsibility for that and forgive as to that content in my own mind? So one simultaneously moves out of doormat posture, and that situation becomes a stepping stone in their lives. So that'd be my first response to your first comment. I'll have to find out who this Jesse Lee Peterson is to see whether it would be something we could connect with. Thanks for your suggestion to connect with him. And or maybe you could connect us with him, let him know why you think we would do well together and arrange a conversation. And then the keys to the kingdom are the keys to heaven in the mind. So if we look at the word heaven as, or the kingdom of heaven as the Greeks translate it, it sounds like, and it's been made to sound like someplace off in the sky. And if you listen to Yeshua, he's really clear that's not what he's talking about. He says, somebody tells you it's over there, or so, believe them not, it is here, it is now, it is within you. And so, and properly translated from the Greek, from the Aramaic, where the Greeks interpreted it as someplace off in the sky, totally denying what Yeshua was pointing to. He was saying you've got to go inside yourself. Those words would be more properly translated as the community of love. So the place you connect with the community of love is within you. It's inside of you. And so all of the tools that we present are the keys to arriving in that place, whether it's the codependence worksheet, whether it's the power person worksheet, whether it's the reality management forgiveness worksheet, whether it's the commitment. Each one of them is one of the steps in that direction. There is a video on our YouTube channel called the six Aramaic keys of Yeshua, and it looks at what the key important pieces of the puzzle are that are missing from the Greek translations of Yeshua's words. So you might want to check that video out. The question that Sean asks here is there a list? Well, my list would be included in the comment that I often make is all of the above. You know, if you go back to day one of our radio show 14 years ago, then everything, every step, every piece of the puzzle, like that's the only thing we've addressed 5 days a week, 52 weeks a year for the last 14 years is what are the keys? How do you do that? And so every conversation revolves around that, though it may not be necessarily expressed that way. And I think one of the most powerful insights into it is what we've done just the last few days on the show is in the looking at the Beatitudes. These are the keys to bring the mind into alignment with truth that support physiology becoming energetically a space where love enters because its energy is matched by the presence of love rather than the presence of any form of hostility or fear. And then the forgiveness of anything that doesn't belong within the structure. And reviewing Jeannie's book on healing generations one breath at a time. And basically she's just laying out here is the process that she went through in order to move closer and closer into alignment with this being the space of active present love. And then the next thought is it seems we should run for the hills with the way things are unfolding politically and economically. But there's nowhere to run. Well, my take would be the geographic cure never works because when one takes the geographic cure, they go along. To pretend we're not involved in our own lives and creating the challenges that come up is to deny our own creatorship. So, you know, one of the probably the most tragic pieces of news that has ever been fed to us as human beings is that we have had hidden from us the fact that we are by nature creators. And everybody loves this idea of being a creator when the creation's going well. And everybody knows who the problem is when the creation's not going well. And isn't their name always them? So my take would be that it's going to take millions of individuals ultimately doing their work to move in the direction of the truth. You know, that idea of, you know, what you are looking for is what is looking. When we start to live out of what is looking into the world rather than what the perceptual mind constructs for us, then we start to really, truly, literally incarnate. And it's that energy that is going to be the leader. I don't think there's going to be some heroic leader that's going to say, here, look at this. It's going to be people in mass that create a critical mass. You know, Yeshua the physicist talks about a little leavening leavens the whole loaf. What is he saying? He's saying that it's only going to take a few people who will do the work he prescribed. And it is a work to be done. You know, one of my favorite passages, the one where the disciples ask him, you know, what's most important in all this you're teaching? What does the Creator want from us? What's most important? Function is the presence of love, Rachma. And two, do the work. And half of his disciples say too hard a saying, and they leave. And my take is, it's that half that didn't want to do the work that said, these words are too hard to understand. Who can understand them? We're out of here. They're the ones that ran off and made up a religion about how he was going to do it for them. Not going to happen. And then I think that's awesome that you picked up eight Y books, and you put one in a Chick-fil-A book exchange. I didn't know there was such a thing. Maybe that's a thing over in England. I don't know, although I'm not a Chick-fil-A person. So, but that's awesome that you've got some books and you're spreading them around. That's, you know, fabulous. And that might be a good project for anybody to pick that up. And, you know, the book is out of print, so I can't sell you one. But you can go to eBay or Amazon, and, you know, we put enough out back in 29 years ago, I guess, we published the book. And there are about 80,000 copies in print, so there are enough books still floating around on Amazon used or on eBay used that, you know, buy some and share them, pass them around. And, you know, I guess the question, would local libraries accept them? We have had libraries who've carried them. And I don't know in the case of used books. Jeannie was saying that the library here has a used book section. So, you know, give it a shot. Let us know how you make out, and we'll put it out there. And where else could you bring used books to? Well, one of the most powerful contributions you could make in terms of expanding the study and the experience is start a support group working with worksheets. You know, you can do it by Zoom, you can do it in person, and, you know, it will enhance your practice of the tools and expand the possibilities for everybody. And then a last thought from Sean, and thank you for that, where we talked about the right, not right, wrong, not wrong mechanism. Sean saying has the potential to explain and understand more of the mystery of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, the mind or the desert. And, you know, I wouldn't use the word desert to describe the whole functioning of mind. That would be, I would use that word to describe the unconscious function of mind. There is a conscious function as well. It's all one mind, but the information we cannot access, you know, when you look at how the mind works through resonance. And I remember the law of resonance says that when two energy fields are in tune or in harmony with each other, there's an exchange of information between them. So I have a middle C tuning fork, and I hit it on a desk, and I put it through in front of the moving tuning fork, in front of a second tuning fork that's totally, completely still. Now, because of the law of resonance, because the atomic magnetic structure of those two substances is the same, or those two structures is the same, there's an exchange of information between them. Energy moves from the activated fork to the one that's standing still. The one that's standing still takes on the energy of the first tuning fork and starts to move in response. That's the energy, that's the vibration that governs all energy fields. And so when resonance occurs, that energy dynamic starts to take over. So the mind is a resonating device. And, you know, people talk about the mind as many different, well, there's a conscious mind, a subconscious mind, an unconscious mind, he made up his mind, he lost his mind, you know, all kinds of different statements. But in terms of this function that we're talking about a function of the energy system we call the body in its ability to store information and for that information to move into awareness. And it is truly, you know, one of the things we point out about just about everything is that the ego mind has a cheap copy of everything that's real in the spiritual dimension. And the ego mind's cheap copy of the true mind is what we call thinking. The truth is, if most people said what they thought, they'd be speechless. You know, if I say, don't think about the color of your car, what happens? Something about the color of your car resonates in brain cells because I set up a frequency with my voice, caused air molecules to move, caused a drum in your ear, a little piece of flap of skin in your ear to move, move some bones, create an electrical frequency. That electrical frequency is converted to something that resonates brain cells, and the color of one's car comes up. It's not a thinking process. It's, again, it's just pure resonance. So this, the true mind, my take would be, my definition of the true mind would be, in our ability to keep love conscious, active, and present in us, no matter what happens in our world. And then there's this function that we call mental, that most people call mind. I think it's, I would classify it as the cheap copy. And it operates at three different levels. There's what's conscious. Now, it's not a separate from the rest of the mind. It's just if I set up a frequency that matches something in your brain cells, don't think about the color of your car, then that exchange of information takes place, and those brain cells fire the amplitude, you know, like turning up the volume control on your radio or your TV, the amplitude is turned up, so you become conscious of it. So what we are conscious of at any given moment would be the conscious mind. You know, what's your favorite item of clothing? What's the front door of your house look like? What's your favorite food? Notice you're not thinking about the color of your car. So we can cause information to fire, and information displaces information, whatever the strongest resonance is at any given moment. So we have this conscious level of awareness, whatever brain cells are firing at an amplitude, we're aware of it. And then there's the subconscious. Subconscious being that which is just below the conscious level, but accessible. Conscious information would be the color of your car, the front door of your house, what item of clothing, what food do you like. That's all information stored in your mind, and you can access it anytime that you want. But then there's another level of mind, and that would be the unconscious. And the unconscious part of the mind is that we have put brakes on, that part of us that we've dissociated from through denial. So if I said to anyone who's listening, and I want you to, if you would, just really think about this, what's the biggest issue in your life that you've been avoiding and haven't been dealing with? What's the issue that you really need to look at and really need to work through? And I'll invite you to notice right now what's happening with your breath. And if we were sitting face-to-face, one-on-one, what virtually everybody would share with me is that when I asked that question, they held their breath and searched for what it is that they were blocking. Now, when one holds their breath and searches for what it is they're blocking, my take is it's as though, you know, in this biocomputer, this body-mind unit, and information is stored in every cell in the structure, it's like we have this, in the ancient teaching, it's called the veil of the temple, the barrier between the subconscious and the unconscious. And it's kind of when people hold their breath and say, I was thinking about something, I was trying to get an answer, and they're holding their breath. My take is the reason they're holding their breath is because there's a part of the database, i.e. from the neck up, that they've decided that all the information is safe, so holding their breath, they can search through that, and they're not going to confront what they're in, what they've dissociated from. And the breath is shut down because what is stored in the rest of the structure is what they've dissociated from. So when they said the veil of the temple must be rent in twain, they were saying the barrier between the subconscious and the unconscious, the barrier built with denial and holding the breath, must be opened. And that's why you'll hear me oftentimes when I'm processing with someone, I'll ask, are you breathing? Because 99.999999% of the time when I'm talking to someone and something starts to resonate that they don't want to look at, that they don't want to deal with, the breath automatically, spontaneously stops. And our invitation is to restore the breath and to go back into contact with that. And so the unconscious, subconscious, conscious are just different amplitudes at which information stored in brain cells are firing. And you're right that the, as your statement here says, the mind or desert cannot serve in two modes at the same time, love/anger and right-wrong. Can't. It's a right-not-right. Wrong, not wrong. It's going to be on one track or the other. It can't do both. Leaves it in confusion when you try to say both. So you can't serve Satan and the active presence of love at the same time. And remember that in Aramaic, the word Satan means the resister, one who misleads. Some dude with a red suit, the tail, and the pitchfork, you know. You notice the blame game everybody plays. Oh, the devil made me do it. It's something out there. That whole game is all about denial, and we set up our own. And yes, most people live most of their lives trapped in Satan. They're in resistance to, and they are misled by their own minds. Their resistance is to the truth. They lock the breath down and shut down the part of them that holds on to the lie that it's all everybody else's fault, and play the game that they're innocent victims, kind of taking us right back to that first question of being the doormat. So delighted, Sean, to hear that it's making sense, and we're going to rock on. And if you are not aware of it and you haven't taken advantage of it, we have thousands of hours in our archives that you can go back and listen to. So, and we would love for somebody who is appreciating this work and feeling like you're getting something out of it, if someone would step up to the plate and maybe assist us. One of the things we would like to do, and we've got, as I say, somewhere over 5,000 hours of radio shows, and there is a fairly simple way that those radio shows can be converted to MP4s, which are a video format. And when we convert them to MP4s, like if you look on the page regarding the Enlightenment study, Jeannie has taken each of those that we've done, she's converted them to MP4s and put them on YouTube so that you can go back and listen to all of the Enlightenment shows on YouTube as audio tracks. You know, there's just a picture in the background. They're not actually video, but they're audio tracks. And we've got 5,000 or so hours. If somebody feels like you'd like to make a contribution to the work, and you'd like to, you know, take some of your time and do some of that conversion, help us get them on YouTube, that would be awesome. It'd be nice to have someone who, as they're doing it, the ones that don't have notes, the radio shows that do not have notes, to take a few notes, put them in it, and make that conversion so we can put them on YouTube. That would be awesome. And or maybe somebody's in a position where you could fund something like that. And, you know, if you're financially well off and you're benefiting from this and you'd like to see us or support us, and, you know, basically every resource we have is about how do we get this to the next group of people. And I think that the YouTube channel having these available would be really beneficial in terms of putting this out to the world. So if you're in a position to maybe fund a project like that, to hire a company that would do it or whatever. So just, and if you're benefiting from the work, the other thing you can do is jump on our webpage, whyagain.org, and there's a donate button down at the bottom, and, you know, whatever it is, support us. It would be awesome. Beyond that, I think that pretty much covers what Sean had to say. Missy, have we seen Michael yet?
Yes, he's on. I'm going to turn on his microphone. Welcome, Michael.
Well, hey there, young man. Welcome.
Hello, friends. How are you doing?
Hey, we're rocking, rock and roll, and I'm glad to hear your voice, and I'm looking forward to hearing your report. Just to introduce Michael, Michael's someone who's been at Heartland and been involved in the work now for, I'm not even sure how long now, Michael, going on 2 years maybe, year and a half, something like that. And Michael was traveling last weekend and came through. I think you said you drove in, what was it, 2 weeks or 3 weeks, 3,700 miles, so you covered some territory. And Michael was coming through this way, so I had invited him to come and do some work on some issues that he had. And actually, I really appreciate the fact that Michael took me up on that offer, because we ended up spending a couple of days, and I sort of pulled out the stops on some of the things that tend to be more intense ways to open the structure up and open the mind up, open emotions up to deeper levels of processing. So sort of you've inspired me, Michael, to create a 3-day personal mini intensive for people one-on-one like we did using some of the tools that we did. So I look forward to hearing the report, what happened and how you're doing after all that driving, having left here and gone and visited your kids in Atlanta and then off to Texas.
Yes, yes. It was wonderful. And I look back on the past couple of weeks, Michael and Jeannie, and it's amazing how the universe works in our favor. Life is happening not to us, but it's happening for us. So,
absolutely.
Yes, it is so wonderful. I originally, and I did just shy of 3,700 miles. I had and of course, you had told our friends on the program that my mom passed. And that took me all the way up to upstate New York, way upstate near the Canadian border. And I was originally planning to go, you know, up through the center of the U.S., across the Ohio Valley. But with the storms that were, those powerful storms, took me in your direction, and that's how we got speaking and your wonderful invite. So it was wonderful to be able to spend a little time with you and Jeannie. And for the treatments, I was amazed and still amazed at how much better I'm doing, how much better I'm feeling, how much better I can think clear, because I've realized for some time that with the likely generational trauma, with my posture not being quite where it should be, challenged in that regard, how your work on me, if you will, really, really took me to a much better level. And very grateful for that.
Tell us a little bit about your history.
Yes.
I mean, to the degree that it's reasonable to share, we don't need to get any, you know, deep details,
sure.
But just kind of a surface, especially your structural history.
Yes, thank you. Structurally, and, you know, outside the physical trauma, I had a abdominal surgery when I was 18 months old. And looking back in my study of health and the things we've discussed, realized that that was a huge trauma for an infant to have to go through, and mm-hmm. brought me to a new level of how many times this happens to young people in the world every day.
Yeah.
Couple that with I broke my two front teeth when they were maybe about 6 months in my little mouth. So very young. What was that? 7 years old. And that was a bicycle accident. And that started a cascade of dental and bone structure challenges in my mouth for years. And that just continued to compound over the years, you know, having root canals in those areas and just trauma to the teeth, and then having to extract those teeth, going to, you know, bridges. And then having to have the bridge removed, and it was seemed like endless. Just every few years there was something going on. So all that physical trauma really didn't help.
And the way that your head was operating, the way your structure was, the kind of pain you had, share a little bit about that if you would. I'd like to get a report on, you know, where it was prior to us working and where it is now, just how that has shifted, because I know it's been a pretty intense multi-decade pursuit getting it cleaned up.
Yes, yes, Michael. For years now, well over 25, and it's been, of course, over the years has gotten worse, is neck problems, low back problems, and what it seems like all this trauma has caused improper curves, not only in my neck, but also my thoracic spine, the upper spine, and even the lower spine. So all three areas are compromised, and I would go to many different practitioners and search many different practitioners in different states over the years, get a little better here and there, grateful for what these practitioners have offered, but not has not gotten me to where I need to be, and that is correct the situation and optimally look for optimal health. So where I was, again, before I came to see you, and just wonderfully how that orchestrated out, is a fair amount of pain every day. And some days were, some days not. Now, of the few days that we were together, it really seemed to ease the tensions, ease the muscles. And today I have minimal pain in my neck and especially lower back. Minimal. So definitely things shifted. Clearly, the work that you have accomplished is just miraculous.
Well, that's awesome. I'm delighted to hear that. And, you know, basically when I said you've inspired me, you know, when we do intensives, there's a procedure of hands-on energy field work that I've developed over the last 50 years from every seminar, as I shared with you when we were together, when I first discovered still point breathing. That to me was like discovering a miracle. That was 43, 44 years ago. I had a practice in Atlanta back then, but discovering the still point. And since then, you know, in researching and looking at, and, you know, I've worked with body workers on four different continents and studied with people all over the globe. And the kind of like the measuring stick of, do I want to put this into understanding with this work? The key was, does it induce a still point in people? If it does, that's the pinnacle of being in process. And so over the last four or five decades, I've looked at, and that's why I integrated into the hands-on energy field work. And I, of course, I could only integrate what, you know, pretty much I could train anybody to do. And we're not, you know, we didn't go into some deep, you know, training with someone who's got, you know, full knowledge of physiology and, you know, musculature and all of that. Basically, it's energy field work that anybody can put their hands on. You know, our granddaughter does it. She's five. We trained her to do it, or we're training her to do it. And, but working with you, and you were having been through the amount of trauma you were had gone through, were really clear. Yeah, Michael, I'm ready to go for it. Whatever it takes, I'll do it. And I acknowledge your courage because I did it. I went for it with you. And basically what I did is I pulled out all the stops of all the things. And, you know, probably in the work we did, I drew on at least 30 different trainings that I've done over the last 50 years on how to open the mind to letting go of whatever it needs to let go of, and how to shift the energy system toward mobilization, that the natural direction, my take is the natural direction of our genes and of this energy system is toward whole health and wholeness. And if we interfere with it, because we're in charge of the process, we can interfere with it and take it out of its propensity to move toward health and wholeness. And that's become the habit of what you know, the ancient scriptures refer to as the mind of man, is we've gotten stuck in that. And so basically what I did with you is pulled out all the subs of everything I'd done at every level of intensity, which I couldn't just train anybody else to do without a whole lot deeper contact and such. But basically I took everything that I have learned over the last 50 years and put it into what we ended up doing, a three-day session, and you very courageously and bravely breathed through all of it. And, you know, some of it's pretty intense for sure, but that intensity is part of facing the intensity of those energetic patterns when we put them into our structures, being able to open up and move them out. And, you know, one of the things I'll often say to people, in fact, I was talking to a gentleman the other day I've been doing some one-on-one work with, and he was talking about, you know, the thoughts that kept coming to mind, and it kept coming, I said, well, just threaten it with a fast. Threaten your mind with a fast. Tell it you're going to stop eating. You know, just kind of tongue-in-cheek. But fasting is a part of breaking down the mind's resistance to change, as is the kind of physical intensity that we did in that 3 days between the breath work and, you know, as I say, the different places that we worked would cover about 30 different trainings that I've done over the last 50 years to put all those pieces in place to make that kind of shift occur. So thank you for the opportunity. I enjoyed it. It's something that I kind of had almost, you know, laid aside. And so you kind of encouraged me to get some of that stuff back out, which I did. And so I appreciate your willingness. And you definitely opened a space for me to be looking at doing something in addition to what we've been doing when it comes to working one-on-one, you know, that... it's really like, in fact, I've created a 3-day, as I said, one-on-one intensive that I'm planning to do with people, and it's going to be entitled Into Being, an Awakening Through Quantum Still Point. Because really it's stepping into a quantum energy space in that still point. That's what happens in the still point. And so being into each of the techniques that we used to produce that was what you inspired. So thanks for your willingness. I wouldn't have thought of doing this except you showed up at the right time. And it's like, oh, you know, okay, let's pull out all the stops. That's what I did. Yeah, I'm glad you got to be the beneficiary of it. It was cool.
Yes,
when I got home,
indeed.
I said to Jeannie, I'd forgotten how much fun it can be.
And it was fun for the most part for me. And I'm so thrilled that we could be a part of each other's lives in different ways, but for the good of all. And it is amazing how it all came about. So, you know, it was moving for me when you would do the energy work and not all the sessions were, you know, very intense, but there were some real intense moments when, you know, real intense. And they were...
How was your bike doing now?
Powerfully intense. Say again, please.
How is your bite doing now? I know that's been a major challenge. You've gone all over the country, and
yes.
I can't imagine how many dollars you've spent to try and get your bite moving in the right direction. How is it doing since last weekend?
I basically spent my retirement money in health pursuit, and the bite is much, much better. For those that might be listening, my lower jaw is off on both axes, if that makes any sense. And looking at me, you can see the jaw. Michael, how would you explain that? Tilts to lower, one side's lower than the other? Would that be? Would that be
Michael,
correct?
Michael, you're muted.
Excuse me, I had to push my mute button. Yeah, yeah. Your jaw is to some degree still tilted. If you mm-hmm. were looking on a horizontal plane, one side of your jaw would be lower than the other. But also, if we looked from an axis where we're looking into your ear, the one side of your jaw is forward compared to the other. So, two different
yes.
axes that are off. And
yes. Appreciate
That's
you helping with that explanation. And I've known this for several years because when I go to different dentist offices, the dental, you know, the professionals, the ones that are a little more studied in this area than the average, you know, dental office, I could actually see this on the CBT scans, you know, the three-dimensional scans they would do of my head. And
right.
this has come so much, you know, TMJ, the joint. So the
temperament
the joint
of your
is
joint. The, yep.
Thank you. And how one is jammed in the joint and the other is very loose. So this not only the jaws challenged on one axis, but both axis. So quite interesting.
Right.
And so back to your original question, my teeth are coming together quite a bit better, much better.
Cool.
And my study on this is many of us walking around, us beings, have challenges in this area when the teeth do not come together properly. Our proprioception, our moving through space and time, our brain sensing this is what is challenging a lot of people with different sorted
no.
issues, yes.
And that wasn't something that we addressed specifically, but when we do still point breathing, you know, anyone who's done still point breathing with me, you'll notice one of the things that we'll ask people to do is to refrain from swallowing. This TMJ, about a third, this is, you know, one workshop information from about 30 years ago of study, and about a third of the innervation of the body, literally the whole energy flow of the body, goes through that joint. And most people, their jaws are so off that they cannot swallow without opening that joint and cutting the energy flow. And
yeah.
So when one's doing still point breathing, and this is, you know, one of the arenas we address, when one's doing still point breathing and they keep swallowing, it's a way that the mind avoids, very much like John Sarno's work, where he says that back pain is unconscious rage and all pain has to do with repressed or shut down emotional energy. And so when one can keep the jaw open while they're breathing, then those energies can process through and they're not interrupting. It's like the ego's trick of interrupting the flow so that the vitality isn't built strong enough to allow whatever this is that's been in hiding to come to the surface. And it just becomes a habit. Something as simple as swallowing can be a habit that reduces the ability to process whatever one's been hiding from oneself. And that's why in the still point, it's always, you know, it isn't, oh, you're not allowed to swallow, but to the degree that you can let go of the need to swallow. And when that energy flow continues, then you can hit the next level where you can process whatever the blocks are. And to me, that's what it's really all about, is processing out those blocks.
Michael, that's
and having
so
the energy
powerful.
Flow to do it.
So powerful. You brought something back to my mind. And I appreciate the opportunity to hear more and experience the still point. I've heard you speak about it on the show. Been with you all now. I think it's over 2 years. I have to go back and really think about it. But it's been a while. And so appreciate all the information. I recall during the sessions you mentioning about the swallowing and didn't quite put all that together till you just explained it again now. And what that brought to mind is the many years I would be squirming in all the dental chairs with all these procedures and almost gagging.
Yep.
So
yep.
Again, that's a, especially to a younger person, that's a traumatic feeling. And
for sure.
You just brought it all back in perspective for me now. So that's powerful. Thank
you. Sweet. Well,
you
know, it's interesting. If we imagined a human energy field that is totally, completely, properly aligned, and my take is that the bony structure of the head, the pelvis, are literally an antenna structure. They're not there to help us stand up. Our muscles cause us to stand up. Our bones are literally a self-adjusting antenna. If you were to look at the micro-movement of the bones of the head, the spine, the pelvis, the arms, and the legs, they are in a state of continuous motion. It's only a millimeter or two, but continuous motion. And when you look, you know, I thank God for my original work in the field of electronics and physics, because what I came to understand from that field and was able to bring to my medical training was that an antenna is in a certain shape, and the shape of that antenna determines what frequencies it receives. If the antenna is out of alignment, you know, I have an antenna on my house and I it's perfectly aligned and it's the right structure antenna, I get a beautiful sound and picture on my TV of channel 3. If somebody goes up and bends the arm of the antenna and turns it backward, all of a sudden my picture gets snowy, my sound is gone, and my signal's gone. Well, most people, you know, if you imagined a human energy system that's at 100% alignment and 100% vitality, there's nothing you can hide from yourself in that state.
Mm-hmm.
You can't dissociate from content in your own structure and be at 100% vitality, therefore at 100% wellness. You can't do it. And so what happens is we are taught, we are fed in ways like, you know, go into the average restaurant today, and you know, Jeannie and I went out for dinner yesterday, and you know, I won't eat the hydrogenated plastic that they feed people mm-hmm. in restaurants on their, let's say, on a baked potato. And so I asked the gentleman, "Gee, do you have any butter?" "Oh, no, we don't have butter." "Wait a minute, this is a huge, like this is a 500 seat restaurant. You must have butter." So he goes back to check and comes back, "No, sorry, we don't." "So, okay, how about olive oil? You must have olive oil." "Oh, yeah, we probably have olive oil." He comes back up, "No, we don't have olive oil. We only have, I forget what it was, but some kind of seed oil."
Oh, boy.
Well, I mean, you know, the whole culture is just fed in a way that drives vitality down, drives people into disease. We're taught to think in a way. You know, just look at the television, how much anger and rage and hate and fear and drama and trauma and war there is. And those energetic patterns shut the vitality of the system down. We are taught to align ourselves in a way that we don't stay at 100% vitality, so that we can hide things from ourselves and become really good card-carrying members of one world universal religion of blame. And you can only be a member of that religion if you're sick. You can't be a member of that religion and be well. This is not possible.
Yeah.
Because in order to dissociate from content, you have to shut down some part of your own energy system. And this whole culture is custom designed. We're sitting in this restaurant, and we're in one room in this restaurant that I guess probably spreads over five or six rooms, probably 500 seats. And there were seven television sets in the room we were in, like huge, you know, 60-inch or whatever television sets in this one room that was probably 30 by 25.
Wow.
Built for unconsciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, then you get the alcohol, and then you get the seed oils, which, you know, the seed oils are deadly. And then you get the hydrogenated food and the sugar, and the nutrients are taken out of it. And that's basically our culture. And until we start to correct those, and if we are if we've lived that lifestyle and we are physiologically out of alignment and we our vitality is down at, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50, if people who are severely symptomatic, their vitality is somewhere down there. If that person goes to 100% vitality in an instant, man, the trauma that's going to move, the intensity of that healing process is going to be enormous.
Yes.
Takes a lot of willingness. And most people won't stick to whatever it is that opens the space for that healing, because to do it, they have to face and they have to deal with and they have to feel and they have to process whatever not only they have hidden from themselves by living that way, but what their bloodline and what their generations have hidden. And the whole objective of this work is literally to bring this whole energy field into proper alignment, literally the bony structure, so that it is the antenna it's designed to be. And it's not a fixed antenna. As I say, it's in a state of motion all the time. And so it's a self-flexing, self-adjusting antenna. In one state, it brings in one set of frequencies. As it moves through its range of motion, it brings through a whole range of frequencies. If some part of that antenna is physiologically or emotionally traumatized or compromised, those energies are just missing from the system. It's like bending the arms on the TV and all of a sudden my nice, clean, clear picture and sound turn to crap and it's snowy and flipping around and, you know, all of that goes on. That's basically what happens when we are out of alignment and we're not, this system isn't allowed to move through its full range of self-adjusting in terms of the frequencies that it receives. And you go back to the Aramaic scriptures, which are about physics and physiology, and you hear the statement made that in the Creator's energy field, we live, move, and have our being. Mm-hmm. And my take is, you know, if we recognize that the Creator is love and we are made in the image and likeness, then we are love. Now what we know from a physics point of view is when you get an energy field moving through another energy field with which it has resonance, there's a transfer of energy between them. If in the field of love we live, move, and have our being, then that literally induces in every cell of our structure vitality and the presence of love. If we fall out of alignment with that, then we step into disease process and we can shut down those energies that we don't want to feel and deal with. And so for somebody who's willing to do the intensity that you were willing to go through, that's, to me, that's like the whole objective of this work. And we're working to give people tools wherever they're at to be able to do the process.
Yes. You know, Michael, I'll share with the folks listening. For 20 years, I realized I left the corporate world. I went to study health. And I had been on a search for optimal health myself, watching my father suffer early in life and pass from this earth plane, working on figuring out, and I understand now more about figuring out, but trying to process what happened. What is happening with people's lives? And I've watched people over the years working in the wellness center that were doing, quote, I put it in quotes now, everything right, diet, exercise, and still pass this earth plane. And it wasn't
without forgiveness.
Yes. It wasn't until I found you and your work and started putting these things together and still to this moment, learning all the time and finding myself in the place I am now, I have literally gone coast to coast searching for help. And not because I'm independently wealthy. I've worked for an airline and I had access to wonderful flight seats when they were available. So I was blessed in that regard. Literally
right.
gone coast to coast. And to speak about the things we've spoken about in bringing these practitioners and saying, what is this man saying in this YouTube video that my teeth got to come together? But no one has touched any of those things. They'll just look at you and say, well, I think this will this will help. And again, it did for a little while, may bring a little relief, but it doesn't, never got to the root of the problem till we finding the work that you're doing.
Well, you
so
know,
much
they
appreciation.
Called, yeah, they called Yeshua the great physician because that's what he was, and he knew where the core of it was, and the core of it, the missing piece in the culture is forgiveness. We've been taught to pardon each other. I'm a member of the One World Universal Religion of Blame. It's all your fault, but I'll let you off the hook, as though that's going to change anything that's moving in me. We need to shift back to a state of responsibility and recognize that forgiveness is about how I handle and process out every energy in me that never belonged in me. Otherwise, if I'm not willing to face and deal with and process through and forgive that, remove that, it's going to have its deleterious effect wherever it's stored in the tissue structure. That is the cause of all disease. And we're not meant to be diseased. Our natural inclination, right from the genes up, is to move toward health, wholeness, and well-being.
Mm-hmm.
That's our natural state, would be my offering.
Yeah. And I remember learning from you about John Sarno. When a cell is, what is it, the oxygen is reduced by just 5%?
Yes. Yep. Oxygen missing from a cell by the muscle restriction by being out of alignment creates a 5% lack of oxygen that cells in is excruciating pain.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. And that's been me for years.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, sir, I'm delighted that you that storm happened for our sake, that you headed in this direction and we got to spend some time together. And I thank you for inspiring me to put together that 3-day personal intensive on moving into being and awakening through quantum still point. Awesome.
So blessed to be a wonderful part of that, Michael. Thank you, Jeannie, and so much appreciation for it. And looking forward to continuing with your exercise and continuing to work with you.
All right, my friend. Take care. Blessings. Lots of love.
Blessings. Bye now.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. Have the best year yet of your eternal life. Take care. Bye-bye.